We'll start with the call rule.
Wow. Daniel, out of play. Amira, off top.
Sure.
Yeah, I it's them on the front of the show.
Sonia Agarwal. Jay Anand.
Yeah. I can't see that. That's stupid. Yes.
Lydia Bloom.
It's RPCC. Lydia.
What? I said, oh, fitness. What?
Stay here. Here.
Hello, here.
Oh, was it a wait?
Dylan Carson.
Here.
Maishay Kazi. Admir Sekik. He texted, he's running late. Colton Cook.
Present.
Zora Daram.
Present.
Grace Dorward. Max Ehrlich.
Here.
Armin Bard.
Actually, we should switch.
Christian Flournoy.
Present.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. I'll leave
Ezra Galperin. Isabella Gale.
This is overstating the anchor.
Lawrence Hahn. Vansh Kakra. Sion Kim. Catherine Christopha. Amelia Lyons. Yasmin Masood. Ellie Porter.
Here.
John Purcell. Hayden Spector.
Here.
Jocelyn Suavi. Christian Tarla.
Late.
Thor Wagsback.
Gone
Alexander Walters.
President.
Hayden Watkins.
Here.
Zachary Yabut. Eric Yao.
Here.
Kennedy Young.
Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigahono. The Gaigahono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigahono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigahono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. We'll begin with swearing in new members. So we'll start with Amelia. You can come to the middle and stand, and then we'll do Calvin separately because they are not both representatives. Okay. You're good wherever you're comfortable. Okay. Just repeat after me. Let me say your name. Swear that I will bear true faith and allegiance to Cornell University, uphold the charter and bylaws of the Student Assembly, and well and faithfully discharge the duties of representative to the Student Assembly. Congratulations.
Yay. Okay.
Okay, Calvin is in the room. Okay, Calvin, you can also come to the front.
Okay, let me come up closer. This is the
right around here.
You can take a
video.
Yay.
Oh, that's okay. That's yeah.
Yes, stop where you are comfortable.
Getting down.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay, please repeat after me. I, let's say your name, swear that I will bear true faith and allegiance to Cornell University, uphold the charter and bylaws of the Student Assembly, and well and faithfully discharge the duties of Director of the Office of Ethics for the Student Assembly. Congratulations.
You didn't clap it, never. It's a quorum.
It's a violation either way. All right. Moving on to approval of the minutes. We have meeting minutes from March. Yeah, I'm gonna give you guys minutes to a few minutes to read the minutes. Please start with the fifth and then move to approve and then go in order. Like, don't mass approve.
Thank God you're speaking to the office immediately. They make it look so much cooler. I think
you're invited to the room.
That's the best in the group. That's your part. Feels like a random. Well, who's lovely? It is not a question. I'll stop. Thank you.
What? In the box? Check the box. Yeah, yes. Many minutes are in the box.
Yes. Nice haircut. So no one found my brakes also.
So
if no one believes now, button bringing.
Oh, yeah. Christians
or water? Yes, it doesn't.
I literally texted you the second after you lost.
Yes.
Eric. I got it. Yes.
So like as a clerk's error, Amira texted me that she was marked as absent on March 19th, but was present, and I also have that in my records.
I uploaded an updated version. You look more like Christian.
Well, I think Christian Tuvala. And...
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Christian Tuvala.
You look like siblings. You look like siblings.
It's true. I think actually literally just said the same thing because y'all talking about Laura and I said she looks more like Christian.
No.
It's white, brown, and
it's more Christian. Look this way, look this way. No, it's just.
Okay, not much of what's going on sounds like references to the minutes. I would really appreciate some motions to approve some meeting minutes.
Don't do it.
Representative Walters.
Motion to approve the meeting minutes of March 5th, 12th, 19th, and 22nd, or 26th.
Wait.
Okay. There were seconds. There any dissent? I'm like, all right. We're now going to vote on whether or not to vote on approving the meeting minutes. Okay. All those in favor of voting on the meeting minutes, please raise your placards. All right, that's a clear majority. Yeah, all right, we're moving to voting. All in favor of approving all four meeting minutes, please raise your placards.
Yes.
It's not on paper. All right, stop the back and forth. Okay, all those opposed to approving the meeting minutes. All right, vote of 19, one. Oh, any abstaining. That would be crazy. And a vote of 19, 1-0. All meeting minutes have been approved.
I said March 5th, 12th, 19th, and
Yes. All right. Okay. Please stop going back for stop this. Stop talking. Out of turn. We have no presentations. We have a communication to Student Assembly, which is that Resolution 66 or the student activity fee was approved sometime last week, or early this week. So, oh, it was Monday. Okay, approved on Monday. Then moving on, we have no items on the consent calendars. So we'll stick with reports of officers, committees, and liaisons. Representative Bloom.
Conference. Hopefully we'll have a meeting in the upcoming week, but we'll see. We're still working on some Earth Day tabling in Hope Plaza, so that's purple right now. There has been a couple progressive steps in getting aluminum can recycling in the frats. So still working on that and trying to maybe looking to implement that not in the spring but next fall, but at least getting some of the logistics sorted out. So yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Vice President Wagsback. Any further reports? Okay. I'd like to introduce a guest, actually. Trustee Paul Hare is a former Student Assembly president, two-term, and so I invited him back whenever he's on campus for this next month. So excited to have him, although it's not in the, you know, time-honored space, the memorial room. Still happy to have you. Okay, we have no announcements other than that. Oh, and I guess going to SUNY this weekend should be exciting. There isn't much like relevant, much not much business relevant to us on the agenda. There will be elections while there, so hopefully we'll have good updates for you all afterwards. And off the record, like drama to report next week, that always happens. So moving down the agenda to public comment. I'll now recognize any community member who wishes to speak at this time. Each recognized community member who wishes to speak may speak once for up to 3 minutes. Once recognized, there is a 1 hour limit for the public comment period. Are there any takers of public comment? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to the second reading calendar, where we will begin with Resolution 67, transferring funds to the Multicultural Greek Fraternal Council.
Okay, there we go. Hi, everybody. So this resolution was kind of intended to move through along with the student activity fee because they're kind of a package deal. However, as we took longer to pass the student activity fee, this got pushed back more and more. But MGFC, it's an organization that we've, I think, talked extensively about in student assembly, having concerns about how they track their finances and like the diligence and like how specifically like they are tracking their finances, but we know the money is going to organizations. And so there were a lot of like fears, both in finance committee and assembly at large, about completely cutting funding to MGFC because they couldn't track their finances because the funding was going to benefit students. And so the decision that the finance committee came up with in our meeting where we went over the student activity fee was to disperse 60,000. I was under the wrong impression when I wrote this resolution. It is 60,000, not 40,000. But 60,000 from our reserves to go into the account of MGFC. So that way MGFC is at the 50 cent for student activity fee. Therefore, they have pressure because they're eligible to be cut if they're not actually keeping better track of their finances. However, the hope I think of everybody is that MGFC is not cut from the student activity fee next cycle, because they have better tracking of their finances. And the $60,000, it's a little bit over $2. It would equate. So sorry, I'm a little under the weather. It would equate to a little over $2 from the student activity fee. So it's a little bit more, I think, than they had this last cycle, but roughly equal. So it's about the amount they, it's about the amount that they're used to. So yeah, any questions? Also, I moved to amend line 3 and line 18 to change 40,000 to 60,000.
Is there dissent to that amendment? Okay, seeing none, the amendment has been made. Any further debate, questions, discussion? Representative Ehrlich?
I move to close debate.
Sorry. Is there a second? Is there dissent? Seeing none, debate is now closed. This has been passed to the third reading calendar. We'll move to Resolution 73, calling for Cornell to improve its land acknowledgement and recognize the benefits obtained through the Morrill Act of 1862. There is an appendix in the box as well. And Representative Carson, if you can just speak loudly into the mic, please. The room is oddly set up. Can't hear that well back here.
Okay, cool. All right, I'll try and talk loudly. It's been a hot minute since... Okay, so let me see. It's been a little bit here since I put this forward. But anyway, so basically, I'll just run you through like each component of this pretty much to give you a good picture. So as we know, Cornell University is a land grant institution. And that means that, as part of that, it benefited from the Morrill Act of 1862. And that provided thousands of acres of indigenous lands to states as land parcels or scrip to be sold to like provide the endowments for these land grant universities like Cornell. And this relied on, or the land for the grants relied on a dispossession of indigenous lands that were through treaties, but that were often signed under coercion with little compensation for those groups. Furthermore, Cornell received about, it received a vastly, a great, a lar a much larger amount of financial benefit from the 1862 Morrill Act that a lot of other land grant universities did. It's about like $6 million. And you know, if you look at other peer land grant institutions, they've done a lot more than we have. They've offered, like, I think we offer some courses about indigenous history of the institution, but I don't think but you know, there's a lot more we can do. Like if you look at, you know, you can host symposia, you can, you know, at least just have something in your land acknowledgement that references, the benefits of the land of the Morrill Act. So I think there's a lot more we could do. Right now we, you know, our land acknowledgement definitely acknowledges our relationship with the Gaiakono, but it doesn't mention any of the ancestral lands of, these other groups, which, you know, the university grew its endowment from. You know, there's also the Morrill Act, Morrill Hall on campus, which is named in honor of Justin Morrill, who is the sponsor of the act. So, you know, there's symbols of the act on campus, but not a lot of like information out there on, about its significance. And finally, we still own like 50% of mineral rights to this Pipestone quarry in Wisconsin, which is, you know, for the Ojibwe is a sign of significant spiritual interest, but we can't actually like mine it because it's like a national historic, it's on the National Register of Historic Places, but yet we still keep it. So essentially all that said, just for background, but I'm trying to at least see what the administration has to say about this by putting this forward, by recommending that they update their land acknowledgement to recognize these lands seized from Native nations and which with which we grew our endowment. So yeah, basically just recommending that we update the land acknowledgement, and also, you know, maybe it would be nice, I think, to have some signage around Morrill Hall that just like gives a little more history, a little more detail to the legacy of the Morrill Act, because right now there's not much there. And also, sorry, the last thing is to recommend that as a first step, leadership transfer its 50% ownership of mineral rights to the Ojibwe. I doubt that'll happen, but again, I put this forward primarily to see what administration has to say, because they've been often very silent on this topic.
Okay, Representative Ehrlich.
Is this mic working? Okay. I think this resolution is super important. That's why I sponsored it or endorsed it. I think it's more important now than ever in light of the comments that President Kotlikoff made when he came to assembly a couple weeks ago. And I'm glad that we have someone from the Board of Trustees here when I talk about this, because if anyone should hear it, it's you. I think it was incredibly offensive that President Kotlikoff came here and tried to defend Cornell's participation in the whole land grant situation with the Morrill Act. I think what he said essentially amounted to the idea that because the government stole the land before they gave it to Cornell, that we have no responsibility for it or no responsibility for the continued ownership over that land. And I mean, I still can't believe he said that, but I think that was incredibly offensive. And I think that we have a responsibility, especially in light of those comments, to make up for this institution's historical involvement and continued assent to that historical involvement in land dispossession, and also not being willing to make up for that land dispossession in whatever ways that we can at least attempt to do that. So that's really all I want to say.
Representative Bloom.
I guess I'll just talk, like, I don't know. I feel like you guys can probably hear me. I just want to echo also what Representative Ehrlich said as well, but I never really realized. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Okay. I would just like to echo what Representative Ehrlich was saying. And just like, I never really realized, how much Indigenous groups value the land. Like, it's one thing to say, like, oh, they value the land and then write it off. But it's another thing to understand why and the history behind that. And I never really completely understood that until I took a class here, kind of talking about different Indigenous peoples and how they value the land and how they utilize the land. So I think this is really interesting. And obviously, I'm in support of this, but I am interested to see what they're going to say to this because I do think we need to acknowledge everything. And even if that means like more signage and stuff, that's, I think, really beneficial. So.
Representative Spector. So I'm in full support of this, but I just wanted to ask, why has Cornell given any sort of reason as to why they're maintaining the mineral rights instead of handing them over? Because from what I have seen online, it seems like they can't mine it. There's nothing they can do with it and just seem to be holding on to it for the sake of holding on to it. Do you know if they've given a reason?
I don't know. I don't want to say something incorrect here, so I'm not entirely sure. I don't have that information. I think in the past I just haven't. I don't know. I've been talking. I when I was making this resolution, I was working a little bit with this professor here in like Indigenous Studies, John Parmenter, and he was telling me about he's been trying to do a lot with this. He's talked to administration about this before, and they've been kind of silent on it. So I don't think they've, from my knowledge, put forth a reason to why. But again, I could be wrong about that. But
Vice President Wagesback.
yeah, I mean, I think you and you kind of touched on it a little bit when you were talking about this at the start. Like, it probably isn't very realistic to expect the administration to give up those land rights. So, like, why do you feel like it's important to include? Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess kind of like I'll try and add to what I already said, but I guess first of all, I think first of all, it's just good to hear what administration has to say and why they why this is the case, because again, they it's information has been not they haven't given much information up to this point on that, so I think this is a good way to kind of make them respond at least in some way. And I think also it's just I mean I don't know, to me I feel like it's an important issue, even if it does if it doesn't necessarily happen right away. I think just bringing it up, I mean, can at least get the ball rolling on. I don't think many people know about this, so I think just bringing it up to get people more aware. I don't know if it just from an informational perspective, I think is important. That's the main reason I put that in there.
Representative Masood.
Yeah, I completely agree. I really love this resolution. And I think that if we were to just not say, like, not ask for this step, even though you're giving them a very clear, tangible first step that if they took would be like them very blatantly choosing to make a difference in how they've been operating for years. And so them rejecting that also makes a very big statement on what. On how they feel about this, and it'll just be another time where we hear Koltukov saying he doesn't really care the same way he did when he came into the meeting last a couple weeks ago, and he said that, oh, it was already bought, and like what am I going to do? Like what are they going to do about it? But that's not how this works. And so I think there's a lot of value in like reparational kind of policies like this. And I think that whether he rejects it or not, it should definitely be on his desk. So. And move to close debate.
Their dissent. Okay. Seeing none, debate is now closed. This has been moved to the third reading calendar. We'll move on to Resolution 77, improving communication from housing and residential life to students about building-wide maintenance issues.
That's my job. Ezra's not here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
That.
After Passover.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. Even this is in our usual location. I'm really excited to announce my first resolution on student assembly. And before I get into this is the first of many. I have a lot of housing issues I want to deal with during my time in the assembly. But I want to take a minute to point out that this resolution really came from tabling. Me and Ellie, we tabled in RPCC in Olin, and we noticed that about, like, I want to say over half, if not like significant majority of the issues that students talked about were not academic, were not social, they were housing related. And so, you know, as assembly members, we think we know what students want, but until we actually get out there and table, we really don't see the majority of what students want. We don't hear it from them. So I would just encourage everyone to table more. But yeah, so housing is a big issue. And I want to start off by saying the housing department has a lot to deal with. It's not an easy fix that they can just snap their fingers, give every student what they want. They deal with thousands of residents. These are old buildings. They have wear and tear. But I'm asked, we're at this resolution is asking for communication, because I think as residents, as people who pay for housing, I think communication, especially with building-wide maintenance issues, is a right that we have. And I think we need to start enforcing that with them. So the main thing to understand with this is that all the dorms on North Campus have a RHD, a residence hall director. And that is their liaison for the HRL, the Housing Residential Life. And they work with them on a lot of issues, whether it's like plumbing issues, vending machines, elevators, or room swaps. And a lot of students submit issues that they have, and they submit a lot of maintenance requests, and they don't hear back at all. And so this resolution is really going to standardize the communication that HRL is going to make the RHDs do for all the residents in two specific ways. So first off, it's going to do a we're going to do a building maintenance status update, which is a bi-weekly, every other week email to all the residents in a building stating the major building-wide maintenance issues that a residence hall is facing, such as but not limited to vending machines, elevators, plumbing. And when they heard about this issue, the ETA, when it's going to get resolved, and who the point of contact is if there's a workaround. Again, we're not saying the RHD or HRL has to go in with the tools and fix an elevator because the Jameson elevator was broken for months. We're not saying that they have to fix it immediately or they have to even do a better job than they're already doing because a lot of this is outsourced, but they need to communicate to residents. I met with multiple RHDs and they said, I get so many, you know, I get so many maintenance request forms like every day about the same issue. And I'm like, well, hypothetically, if you were to email all the residents saying, we understand this is broken, We heard about this. This is what we're doing to solve it. I don't even have an ETA for you right now, but we're working on it. I think that would give a lot more clarity to residents than what they're currently getting. I think that would ease a lot of the tensions that people have about housing. And then also, I think there would be an easier way to standardize this on a website, whether it's on the housing portal or that each of the buildings have a website themselves, which is open to the public. Either one of those ways. I kept it very specific in what I want them to say. I was very specific in the language in terms of like the labels they had to use for the status updates, the timelines, how the residents should proceed. But I think in addition to having a like, and this is not for specific one singular person issues, but this is for building wide issues, that they could have on the website a common, like an ongoing list of like whether something is resolved, whether it's been reported, whether something's scheduled about these building wide maintenance issues, because there's a lot of them, especially for the North Campus dorms that have been around for a while. And at the end, I asked that the HRL also, in addition, give us their people. They offer like through an email, like a form you can submit, which is like a housing sort of experience thing. I asked that they implement this starting in the fall, and then they also share with us the results from this year as well as last year, because I think that would sort of give us an idea. Maybe that would have an effect on the housing and people's opinion. But yeah, overall, this is the first of many. It also says in there that we would have QR codes plastered around, you know, the major areas of the dorms where students can access this website, and they could, or what the updates on the website to see their, you know, major building issues. So yeah.
Yeah, my one thing to add is I feel like a lot of resolutions in assembly have lately been focused on increasing like the accessibility of dorms. And I feel like this is also a major step in doing that. So students know how to navigate, you know, a broken elevator if they need an elevator to like, you know, go up the building. So that's the only addition I have.
Any comments, Representative Walters?
So I'm an RA, and a lot, not a lot, but a fair amount of the correspondence that we have with residents from the other RAs that I've spoken with as well are about maintenance issues and facilities requests. And I think that having this sort of streamlined initiative to make it a lot easier to have access to information about the status, updates, timeline of different maintenance issues is really great, because it would also take a load off of RA's backs.
EVP Flournoy.
I definitely think this is a great resolution. I think kind of one of the things that comes to mind the most is like the washing machines, because I remember living in Morrison last year, and for whatever reason, you'd always see a washing machine that either doesn't work because of the payment or the door's off for whatever reason, and you never knew it was going to get fixed. And that's definitely something that I think this will definitely help address. I fully agree. And motion to close debate.
Second.
Is there dissent? Seeing none, debate is now closed, and we'll move on to Resolution 78, recommending an adequate provision of course information to students prior to course enrollment.
Hi guys. So I wrote this resolution specifically because of some frustrations I've had with my own class this semester, but I've also talked to a lot of people who have had similar issues where there's just not a syllabus available for a course, even 9 weeks into the semester, like I've recently experienced. And I think that it's only fair that students have access to some level of course information and what, like how much work they can expect to be doing in a course before they enroll. It's all there in the resolution. That's pretty much all I got to say about it.
Representative Shudere, I saw your hand first.
Hi, great stuff. Totally agree with the entire sentiment of the resolution. Two minor suggestions. Number one, I think there should be some language in there, like adding on, like recommending that like the faculty also reaffirm this as well, because like from my understanding of how syllabuses work right now, professors are highly, highly, highly recommended to upload them onto like course registrar, but just like for some reason they like don't. And the second thing is that I would recommend like adding some teeth to the resolution in terms of like some sort of like repercussion for professors who don't end up adding syllabuses, or buy back in for like students who like are in those classes where they don't get a syllabus for 9 weeks, and then all of a sudden the professor changes the policy where it's like, oh, one test is like now worth like 50% of their grade or something like that, and they didn't have that knowledge beforehand. There should be some provision in there that like lets students get out of those courses as well. Just to, like add on top of the same sentiment.
Can I ask what that might look like? Is that recognized?
You can yield the rest of your 3 minutes
I yield the
and
rest of my
respond.
3 minutes to Representative Shaduri.
I think language at the bottom being like student assembly strongly recommends the faculty senate to reconsider like whatchamacallit syllabus policies to include like yada 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 like like mandatory syllabuses, and then also strongly encourages the faculty senate and administration to reorganize drop date policies such that if a student were in the class, then they would be able to pull out of that as well.
Representative Ehrlich.
Couple of things. One, really glad Alex was able to come back to our policy committee and we were able to discuss this and refine it. And thank you to Alex for writing all of this. I originally had some concerns about this being a little too like restrictive on faculty in the first version, and we worked on it, and I think it's a really fair thing for faculty now. It's not like a big requirement, right? You've got a short course abstract and prelims and midterms, right? So like we're not talking about having to put every single assignment out there, every single thing you might have on a syllabus. I know some professors really don't like circulating syllabi, and kind of along the lines of what Ishan said, we should consider how professors would feel about something like this. I like the idea of we can add stuff between second and third reading calendar, right? So I like the idea of maybe adding something, just encouraging faculty senate to take it up, and that's something we should definitely talk about. There's something else I was going to say, but I forgot what it was. So there you go.
Representative Sekic.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. This is Mike on.
Yeah.
I really, really also like the resolution. As a senior, I'll tell you, there's been so many times where professors have a amorphous syllabus to say the least. But I think just it's a really good resolution. But I definitely agree with you, Ishan. But I think something that I would recommend to everyone is that I think the faculty are definitely going to be hesitant to kind of implement any kind of institutional repercussions or anything like that. But instead, I would simply recommend you guys reach out to your college's student services or the dean's office. Like that, this is something they can help you with. And if you tell them, and I'm sure if other students are experiencing the same problem, they will ask students or the professor. But you can. These offices also are there to help you for these things and act as an intermediary between faculty and students. So if you have an issue like this, for the time being, I would recommend you definitely bring it up with them because I have before and they took my concerns seriously as well. But I also just have one quick amendment I wanted to make that I pitched to Alex the week before, because I think in line 29 we should also add like writing assignments or essays, considering a lot of the humanities students here don't have like traditional prelims or tests, and so we want to make sure there's no ambiguity there. So I want to motion to amend the resolution in line 29 and add written we could say major written assignments after the line midterms. So plan preliminary examinations, parentheses, prelims, comma, midterms, comma, major written assignments, comma, or tests of any kind.
Is there a dissent?
Also, after major written assignments, comma,
Wait,
private.
that's the motion's already been made and seconded, so you can a motion to amend the amendment or withdraw and then re-motion. Okay, well, okay. All right, just
Can someone else just amend it after you
yeah,
put this
just
one on?
motion to amend the amendment. Okay, whatever. All those in favor of voting on the amendment. Because there was all those in favor of the amendment, because there was dissent on the amendment and not a motion to amend the amendment. Okay, we can go. Okay, well, I'm sorry. Going into debate on the motion to amend. Wow. Really out of practice. Okay,
I
there was most
withdraw the
proposed
amendment.
debate.
I
Okay,
withdraw the amendment and
the amendment was withdrawn. We're
I
removing.
re-motion
Okay.
to amend line 29 to say plan preliminary examinations, parentheses, prelims, comma, midterms, comma, major written assignments, comma, projects, comma, or tests of any kind, semicolon.
Is there a second on that amendment? Is there dissent on that amendment? Seeing none, that amendment is made and approved. Okay, Vice President Watkins.
Admir kind of perfectly set me up. I have the privilege of working in the Brooks Student Services office, and my job these past 2 weeks has literally been emailing professors and getting them to upload their syllabi to the class roster. And I can say like 100% the problem is like professors. Most professors are pretty good about it. But like the registrar has been very active about trying to make sure that people are doing this, and they're simply not doing it. So I wanted to express support for the idea of adding teeth to this because I don't think really professors see a lot of value in it right now. So some of them.
Representative Orwood.
I would say also maybe something to add to that is like changing syllabi like late into the semester. So maybe adding like some sort of line about like this being the semester that you're kind of the syllabus that you're kind of like held to at some point, like in the semester, like a couple weeks in. Because I've had that a lot where it's like a little bit of a vague syllabi, and then suddenly we're in April and things are appearing. So yeah, I feel like just having like some information about that would be good.
Okay. Representative Trolla.
Yeah, so I agree with that. Something about changing the syllabus would be nice to be in there. I think if there's like a some sort of formal process. I've had professors like ask us by like, show of hands, like whether we would like a certain change or whatever. And I kind of think it's a good idea because, we're signing on to it or signing up for a class like with an expectation of what it's going to be. And if it changes without, I don't know, our consent, that's kind of like, I don't know, not ideal. So I think it'd be nice to add some sort of mechanism for that in there. Teeth could easily be reducing like their like budget for the class. I don't know how much power we have for that, but not saying we should do that, but that I'm sure that they will respond if that is the case. They won't like it at all. But throwing that out there.
I don't know about decreasing the budget for classes, but I'm definitely open to the idea of some sort of mechanism for ensuring that the syllabus isn't haphazardly changed in the middle of the semester. Yeah.
Trustee Abebe.
Yeah, I had maybe this doesn't fall within like the scope of the resolution, but something to consider would be like maybe indicating like what percentages fall within a specific like grade category. 'Cause I've had a class where like the professor like down curved everyone by like a huge margin. And that wasn't expressed in the syllabus like directly, nor did he give us like any criteria by which he did so. And that like hurt everyone's grade. So maybe that's like something to consider.
Okay. Representative Agarwal.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to further actually Christian's point. I've also had a few classes where they were trying to get like a guest speaker, but they were kind of waiting on confirmation for their availability. So our syllabus did like slightly change actually in terms of like assignment due dates and things like that, and even prelim dates just because they kind of had to work with the guest speaker's availability. So, I mean, I think in those situations, if possible, like it'd be nice to, I don't know, maybe let the professor be able to do that, because I think sometimes those guest speakers can be super difficult to get, or you have to really work with their schedules. So just something to also keep in mind when you're figuring out like those tiny changes they might make in the semester.
Representative Ehrlich.
Personally, I'm actually really opposed to putting teeth, as we've been calling it, into this when it comes to professors. I think it's kind of disrespectful to faculty. I especially think the budget for classes thing is disrespectful to faculty. There's obviously professors who do stuff that I really don't like. And as you all know from being around me for a long time, I get pissed off about stuff like that. But I also don't, I don't want to like come after the faculty. I really think that that's the wrong way to go about this. As for what Sonia mentioned, Like if you look here, it says it doesn't even say to include a whole syllabus, right? It has the short course abstract and planned prelims, midterms, or tests. So in its current form, it's like it's basically guidelines, and it doesn't even really say that you can't change a syllabus in the middle of the semester. And I feel strongly that having it be a bit looser is important, and I like the idea of making it so that it invites the Faculty Senate to be involved, because I really don't want to come after faculty. Like I being a professor is actually like hard and like stressful and like a job. So like I don't know. That's my personal opinion.
Can I use my right of reply?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, I mean we're all talking about like teeth and stuff, and I think that's a really nice sentiment. And definitely beyond the scope of what I was in kind of hoping to do with this resolution. A lot of what this resolution was about was just expressing discontent with how there's a lack of information about anything within the course at all, and it's about being prior to course enrollment. It's in the title, prior to course enrollment. So if that, I would say that that's kind of a separate resolution sort of thing. But then again, if that's what you guys vote to amend.
Representative Shaduri.
As a person who originally said teeth, I'm gonna like slightly modify the analogy to just an incentivization system. I think like I agree with Max's sentiment that like yes, we should support our professors. They have hard jobs. They do a lot of really good things. But also by the same time, just pointing out what Hayden said earlier, this is a known problem that the registrars already have. They are very aware of this. Like the reason why there's a syllabus tab on course enrollment to begin with is because they understood exactly what all of us are talking about here, that students have a basic right to know what type of class they should be signing up for, right? But as it stands right now, professors are not doing that. For whatever reason, some of them may be on top of the ball, some of them may be behind the ball, but we need to have some sort of incentivization system in place in there to make sure something will happen. Because with all due respect to the resolution right now, it just is, it like raises a complaint, but it doesn't offer a solution to a problem that administration already knows exists. So having some sort of incentivization system in there, like students can't enroll in the class until they upload the syllabus or something like that. Something of that nature. I think should be in place. I don't even think the resolution has to explicitly name what that incentivization structure needs to be. Maybe that's a debate that's up to the Faculty Senate, but if there isn't some sort of incentivization system in there, I strongly believe that nothing will get changed in the first place.
Okay, Representative Doran.
I agree, and I was kind of also thinking about a similar incentivization structure where like you just will not have your class posted or like able to be enrolled in on Student Center if you don't have your syllabus posted. And I don't think that that's like inherently unfair or like mean like this could be a couple of words basically about this many tests. And I think that we probably do a little bit more complicated things for student enrollment anyway. So I feel like that's like fair to expect on the other end. I also think that maybe just like make sure we're not getting too nitpicky about like what kind of assessments you could include something about like, oh, if this is worth like 15% of your grade or more, then it has to be included on this. Like because I think it's like, quizzes that could be 5%, that could be considered a test, I guess. So I think that maybe just something about like the weight, because I think that's really what's important also to students is that like, will something that's worth 25% of your grade completely change,
Right apply. So, just on the like incentivization part, not allowing students to like enroll in a course is like I think a little more punitive than it is like incentivizing, and it also just hurts students, especially in the case of where you have like required courses for your major. If that department hasn't posted the syllabus for that required major class, like students are just kind of screwed in that case. So I'd be concerned about that. And then on the other thing, this is really the adequate provision of course information is really only relevant to new courses that have never been taught before, because line 30 through 31, a prior term syllabus will suffice for an adequate outline if the class has been taught before. That makes it even easier for professors to just upload something. So I'm not sure that there really needs to be a punitive slash incentivizing structure in that case.
You spoken yet on this? Okay. EVP for 9.
I will say, I think like, I guess like I definitely get the idea about it being for like I guess newer courses, but like I know that there are courses that like continuously like that are taught every single year that there's like no syllabi at all. So, I mean, I would just say, like, in my opinion, I think that it definitely should apply to those. Like, they have them and they just like don't post them. Like, you go on scheduler or whatever and it's like grayed out and you can't see it. And I think, like, at least when I was like reading through it, I think that is like one of the major, like, important aspects of what this resolution could do. So I would say that is a very important part, along with the new classes as well.
Representative Torala.
Yeah, okay. Wait, just to be clear that that was just an example. I was not trying to get at the professors or anything like that. But I do think that the way we're approaching this is like, wait, no, like I don't not like professors. Mainly I do think this should be a faculty senate sort of imposed thing. At least if we're like sort of imposing any restrictions or whatever, like that should come from them and not from us mostly, even if we can provide our input. Also the idea about like not being able to enroll, I think I know some professors that would actually enjoy that. And so I don't recommend that. Yes. Also, okay, I just in my opinion, I think the grade weighting system or like, 25% prelim one, 25% prelim two, like 30% quizzes or whatever, like that sort of breakdown is honestly the most important thing to me more than anything else, low key. So I would just say, I think that should just be something that we include on there, at least a like early version of it. Again, I'm saying, if they change it, hopefully there's some input from the students or whatever it is. But if I'm signing up for a class, that is kind of the one thing that I care most about. Yes, I just don't think that prior syllabi should suffice. I mean, especially if you do have a prior syllabus, it's no excuse. Like more than ever, like it takes probably what like 5 minutes to update like the year on the syllabus, like at least making sure that it's a current version. I think we're going about this assuming that professors will refuse to do this, and that really isn't the way to go. I really like would like this to come to fruition, and we should just have give like less, I think, I don't know, wiggle room or something. Like we can't assume that they're not going to do it. Like we should be doing it with the assumption that like every professor will be doing this for all their courses. I don't know.
Right of reply. I would disagree that we've been approaching this resolution with the assumption that professors aren't going to do it. I specifically wrote it as a recommendation to faculty to do it. I wouldn't just like admit defeat on that front. But yeah, that's all I have to say.
Representative Sekic.
Yeah, I think we're kind of wasting time here. First of all, this is something outside of the scope of the ability of the Student Assembly. Like, the whole point is this resolution was written as a nice recommendation to the faculty and the Faculty Senate for a problem students are facing. We've established that they're there, that they know about it, and that they're working for it. They won't take kindly or second, or even it wouldn't even work or make sense because there's no legislative authority for us over faculty. So I think we're wasting a lot of time. And so I motion to close.
No second.
Second.
No dissent. Seeing no dissent, debate is now closed. Let's move to the third reading calendar. We'll move to Resolution 79, consolidating student access to university resources.
Okay, so this resolution, what it does is it's basically a written communication between the assembly and.
Just hold that close to your face.
Can you hear me?
No.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. This resolution is a written communication between the assembly and technology committee. I've had the pleasure of being part of technology committee and chairing technology committee. And what that does is establish a student assembly connection to the Department of IT. This resolution is about a bot that's able to take questions from students and post answers. It was inspired by a conversation with a fellow assembly member where we discussed having access to mental health resources, regular health resources, and how we felt that the school has so many informations available through so many websites, but oftentimes is buried under so much information and it makes it difficult to find, which obviously poses accessibility issue to people who may not have access to admission outright. So this just basically consolidates it to one. A prototype's already been made. I've had the pleasure of using it and I enjoyed it. And after talking to Department of IT, they also like it, but they would like to see they would like to see student support of this in order to expedite the process that currently would already be taking place.
And just kind of on that, one of the key areas, or two key areas I'll say is like mental health resources, and then like finance resources have been the two areas that I've just kind of gone around to really talk to people about. And that's like the thing that they feel like they don't have access to as much, and they don't know much as much about. For instance, and this is like one thing that will definitely be referenced as like a resource that they can find, is embedded therapists is like a newer thing that is going on. And those therapists are like placed in different buildings on campus, and they're really intended to be there. So like you don't have to go all the way to Cornell Health for something, but people don't really know about that. So that's kind of like the mental health resources, and also financial resources is really where I've been like trying to go around and figure out like what people really need access to.
Representative Ehrlich, I saw you first.
Two things. First of all, and this is not quite germane, but I just because attendance callouts was passed but not accepted by the president. I just wanted to point out that Vice President Wagstaff got up and left like I don't know,
As
like
did
half an hour into our meeting.
Vice President Young.
Oh, as did Vice President Young. It was at 5:32, according to Representative Tarala. And like I'm just saying, an anonymous source might have told me that Vice President Wagstaff was going to
Okay. All
every
right.
president's
Let's.
event. So
This
that's
is
great.
not relevant to debate.
I do have something relevant.
Okay.
And I'm done with my crash out. But y'all should stay for our meetings because you've been elected by your constituents to be here. But I do have a question. You say in this that Student Assembly through the Technology Committee has collaborated with Cornell IT to develop a student-facing software. Like how far along in development is this software? Like can we see it? It sounds like you're saying it has been developed. Like where are we on that?
There's a prototype. I can.
I can't.
I'm
Sorry, I can't hear
sorry.
you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
There's a prototype. It's not on my computer because I didn't make it. I can bring it to next meeting if you would like to see it and use it. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Lamb. Or Lyons. Sorry.
It's all good.
Apologies. That was.
Don't have a placard yet. Anyway, the question I had was related to the testing and deployment of the student-facing software on line 28. Are you planning on taking volunteers for testing this, or like, what would be the plan of making sure it works effectively into everybody's preferences?
Yeah, I think, oh, sorry. I think one way that we can definitely go about it is going to different just student groups in general. I think if you want to look at it in a more logistical way, we can look at organizations that are on the SAF, and we can go to them and get their representatives and just like be like, what are like three questions that you think you or your representatives might have that they would want answers to? And have them ask the questions, have the bot respond, and see what actually occurs. And if they maybe are saying like, okay, I think this response was great, or they might say, I was really expecting this out of their response, kind of getting that feedback. I would say that's probably a more in-person thing rather than just like a Google form. But I think kind of doing that for different organizations would probably be the one of the best ways.
And just to add on to that, thank you so much for your question. Please join the technology committee because the IT department is always looking for students, and especially for a question about deployment in order to make sure the quality of this is as good as it can be. I think we need especially more students who are astute about that and who care about it enough to ask questions like that. So I do encourage you or anyone else who may be interested.
Representative Carson.
Yeah, I think this sounds like a good idea, definitely in favor of it. But I know Vice President Florno, I think you mentioned like especially having websites related to mental health on this prototype. Is there any other like what are the other specific websites that are being consolidated into this single searchable source? Is it like like a whole amalgam of different ones, or is there a specific few that are being combined?
Well, it's a lot of it is, I pretty much say it's like all of Cornell's resources. It's really supposed to be a place where you're able to just go more like a refined version of you're going anywhere on Cornell's website to really get any of those resources. So if it's about mental health, like essentially it'll give quicker links and able to go through for Cornell Health. If you're talking about housing, it'll give quicker links and things of that nature as well.
Sorry. And just to add on to that, I talked to the IT department, and this is just kind of the nature of having an institution as old as Cornell. You're going to have resources, you're going to have websites that might be a little outdated, you're going to have duplicates. And this is really just to solve that problem that before was kind of just a part of being a university student. So I might be biased, but I really do like this because I feel like I at least could speak for myself. Sometimes there was such an easy solution to a problem that I may have had, and I just wasn't able to find the right resource because it was buried under so many blockades. So I just really like this. And it's the majority, if not all, of websites. So it should cover a lot of accessibility issues that I've been hearing from and also have experienced.
Colton, Representative Cook.
Yeah, I really like this because as a senior, I still do find out, and I'm sure I'm not the only one in here, additional resources that Cornell has. Like, I've been here for 2 years, and then I find out about these mental health resources, and then you have to log into your student center and then go through a whole thing, and then you have to log out of that and then log into another one. There's multiple different accounts. So, I really, unless I'm missing anything here, I really like that you guys just want to kind of streamline it. And is would the goal be, or maybe possible idea, is like, when maybe somebody gets accepted, they get a link to this website, and then this is like a new refined version. So then it o opens up all the opportunities, and here's like a one-stop shop as opposed to, having four or five different Duo mobiles, just to figure out an appointment.
I love that idea. I'll write it down. I don't know if it can be done, but I'll ask. Thank you so much. And yeah.
And one thing I would hope to see later on is like maybe this gets added to syllabi. I know like that was a conversation that we really just had, but like there's a bunch of links that are typically within syllabi. You have like your academic integrity, you have your SDS. So maybe including this link for it's like if you have any general questions and you want quicker links to different parts of any questions that you have, it can be listed there.
Representative Chaudhuri.
Hi. So first off, great stuff. Great thing. Very, very much so needed. I'm actually friends with a couple people on the Undergraduate Student Leadership Council. And last year, their project was actually this specific thing, like working in partnership with IT over the summer to help them like start the prototype for this. And then later on, like they worked with them, helped build a product, and like now it's like ready for like the testing stage. It's really, really cool. I actually do think if you guys go on SEL's website, you can access the prototype as well. So just putting that out there. But if the purpose of this resolution is like to like recommend IT to like start testing and deploying it, I think it should be reworded in a way that we use student assembly resources to make the testing and deploying of the service like actually a thing. Like I think this should like be a comms resolution more than anything else. Like we recommend the student assembly like sends out the prototype to the entire student body so that we can start going and testing it and like making it sure very clear that it's a prototype so we can get like more services inside. Additionally, I think like the language from like 24 to 26 is a little like misleading, saying that like we like collaborated to develop it because I don't think anyone on the technology committee like really developed it. Like we're definitely collaborating in terms of like the like deployment of the product, but I think there's a difference between the two. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. As for your first point, I don't know my opinions on that. So I won't speak on it. I think it should just go up to like the majority of assembly, how we end up deploying it, whether we use our own funds. I think there's pros and cons to both, especially so the student body knows that this was assembly resolution versus it being an official departmental resource might quicken things and how it reaches student body. As for your second point, it was a member on the technology committee who spearheaded making this. It was an IT department. The reason why it was a collaboration between the technology committee and IT department is because technology committee, through the IT liaison, is a part of both student assembly and Cornell IT, which is why it was worded like that, because it came from there and the collaboration was because it's kind of a subsidiary of both, if that makes sense.
Representative Sekik.
Yeah, I love this resolution. And in fact, I didn't see it was on the agenda as I was coming over here, and I was literally thinking about this exact idea. So imagine the feeling of when I show up and I see my this resolution and that was in my imagination is already something that's been going on for a year, which is a great thing to hear. But I just want to understand, you guys were mentioning like a chat bot. Will this be like a website, like a centralized website with a chat bot as well? Is it going to function like Cornell Google, or is it supposed to be like drop downs and like highlights that'll direct you to more things? Because I think personally, if it's just like a chat bot or like a search engine, I think people usually how it is for me, people find more worth than when they find like a website or like and they do some digging. The problem is Cornell is so decentralized. There's like hundreds of different websites, so I think the like the model that they have now works fine, and then they should just centralize it. Also, with this kind of like. Have they talked about this potentially or like replacing campus groups so that or building an app in the future? Because I think if we had this, we would want it also to become an app for students to have. And then also if it replaced campus groups, which no one really like uses or checks because it's just so clunky and there's so many, it was bombarded with like constant things that, and it, even as a student leader, it's very difficult to like access the backend management there. It's not user friendly. But it, so like, are there any answers to those questions?
Yes. Right now it's currently a prototype, so I don't think it's either. I think it's just like it's a software that can be sent or downloaded and then used there through like the coding of it, I believe. And as for like what domain or how it's presented as, I think because it's a prototype, it's still very much open to whichever is more accessible for students. I can't speak to our peer institutions, which was a part of the reason or was part of the way that it was developed. Dartmouth, I believe, has a website. UMich has a website. No, Dartmouth is, excuse me, Dartmouth is developing an app. UMich has a website. And I believe USC and University of Phoenix also have a website, and you put in your NetID, and then you're able to access different resources through there. Whereas Dartmouth believes that there was more accessibility through an app. So I think we can go either way based on peer institutions who have already implemented this. However, right now it's just a prototype. So it's like up to discretion of whichever pathway it goes through.
Representative Anand, you still have something to say?
Yeah, I really like this resolution as a whole. I think it provides like a centralized service, which is really, really necessary on campus because as others have echoed, we have a lot of different ways to get a lot of different ways to get resources, and I think a centralized one would be really beneficial. I do wish that this resolution was a little more specific in its language. So I know you talk about in lines 17 to 20, mental health services, financial aid. I wish you were a little more specific in exactly what it would provide, and I would wish you would talk about the current cert like the current websites that provide that. And whether or not we would still have those websites, like whether we would still have Student Center, because this would be replace something where you would see your courses and register for courses, or like the Mental Health Week and register for all.